Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Cachat. I'm your co-host today, and joining me in the conversation is my good friend, Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good to hear your voice.
Same to you. Well, today we're talking about one of your favorite topics, blogging. And in a recent
recent
episode of This Is Your Life, not that long ago, we detailed the reasons why every leader needs to have a blog. And you believe very firmly that is absolutely true.
I do, because I think the best way to influence other people is with our thought leadership. And whether you're trying to create greater visibility for your business, or you're trying to connect with other leaders, or you're trying to express the vision of your company, whatever it is, I think a blog is a terrific way to do that.
Absolutely. It's inexpensive. It's a fairly easy medium to connect with people. It's also a great way to vet your own kind of perspectives and what you're learning and your positions on different things. So anyway, we have talked about why every leader needs a blog. If you've missed that episode, be sure to go back and listen in. We'll make sure that we include a link for that in the show notes so you can see it. However, today we want to unpack what it takes to craft a killer blog post, because just because you want to have a blog and you think you're a blogger doesn't mean that you and I know how to craft that killer blog post that's going to generate readership and traffic and all of that. So today, Michael's going to break down his 7-step system for you. It's going to be very practical, very hands-on. This is going to be one of those episodes you're going to want to come back and visit again and again. But before we dive into the how-to of that killer blog post, Michael, I want you to speak to what you mean exactly when you say killer blog post, because you actually mean something very specific, defined by certain metrics, et cetera.
Yeah, I do. And I don't mean it's one you just particularly like. You know, there's certain blog posts that I've written that have sunk without a ripple. I'm not talking about ones that some people in your industry necessarily like that they're impressed by, but I'm talking about success as measured by three specific metrics. So the first one is traffic. You know, did you get a lot of traffic on that blog post or not? Now, most blogging platforms, including WordPress, have some statistical information built in. I highly recommend, though, that anybody that's serious about blogging connect their blog with Google Analytics, which is kind of the gold standard in terms of measuring traffic. But I'm looking for blog posts that had a spike in traffic as compared to my usual traffic. So the ones that are outperforming other blog posts that I've written. And there's a way to do that, but I'm not talking about what sometimes people refer to as hits. You know, you say, well, how many hits are you getting? Well, a hit is an irrelevant measure. A hit simply measures the number of times a browser is making a call back to a server for a specific bit of information. So for example, if you write a blog post and there are 5 images on that web page between advertisements and maybe the image you use in the blog post, you know, you're going to have 5 hits, you know, or 6 hits. You could have 30 hits. It doesn't mean anything. The relevant traffic you want, or the way you want to measure it, is really as unique visitors. And Google will give you that information. How many unique visitors looked at that particular post? Or maybe secondarily, you might want to look at page views. Both of those are a way to measure traffic. The difference between a page view and a unique visitor is that you might have a unique visitor who reads 3 blog posts, and that will show up as 3 page views. But I'm talking about page views for a specific post, so that can be as accurate as a unique visitor. So that's metric number one.
And just for those who are listening here, and you mentioned this briefly, but when we talk about traffic too, as you gauge the success of a blog post, you don't compare it. Don't compare it to Michael Hyatt's traffic necessarily.
Right.
If you're someone who's just starting, you may have a spike in traffic that goes from 25 unique visitors to 30, and that's a huge growth for you. So you celebrate that. So be cautious about comparing those kind of things to somebody else. You do want to see what is engaging and what kind of traffic you have, and those numbers will be different for every person.
That's right. And it is important to make it relevant to your other blog posts, because what you're doing is you're kind of in a lab as you're writing, and you're looking for evidence of what works better than other things. And so you're looking for the blog posts that really resonate as measured by traffic first, but then second, by engagement. This is why it's so important, I think, to have comments or to allow for comments on your blog. Now, as you know, Michelle, I went through a period of time about a year where I didn't allow blog comments. I was frankly pretty busy and I felt like I couldn't give it the attention I deserved, but I came full circle. I repented of my
evil ways. Your evil, evil ways.
And I turned comments back on. And the thing about it is blogging when it's done best is not a monologue. It's a dialogue. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to do when I'm writing is I want to start a conversation. And if I've really hit the nail on the head, if I've created something that resonates, people are going to want to discuss it. So for example, I had a blog post this week where I was talking about how do you optimize your computer for top productivity? Subtitled 10 utilities I install first on any new device to shave time and drive results. Well, I've gotten a bunch of comments on that because whenever I write on technology, especially the apps that I use, for whatever reason, people want to talk about that. They've got a ton of questions they want to ask me. They've got follow-up. They want to argue with me, but all that's good stuff. And so engagement is a key sign of that. And I think it's part of the definition of writing a killer blog post.
All right. So far we've talked about traffic as one metric. The second is engagement, which you really evaluate by looking at the comments and the amount of interaction that you have. Like you, I love the engagement. I mean, that's to have that kind of ongoing feedback, even when it's criticism or disagreement, I still enjoy just the conversation about it. So you want to look at engagement, how many people are actually interacting with your content. And then what is that final metric that you use to evaluate a killer blog post?
Yeah, I'm looking for shares. In other words, I want to look at the number of Facebook likes or shares, and I want to look at Twitter and how it's what's happening to it in social media. And if, for example, on my blog post, you can see this readily because I have these share buttons that track that kind of stuff, but you can also track it in things like Buffer or other apps that are specifically designed to do that. But if somebody really likes something, the first thing they want to do is share it. This is why it's such an important measure of a killer blog post. You know, if nobody's commenting, no engagement, if you don't have much traffic, and if you don't have much in the way of shares, it's not a killer blog post. So if you take those three metrics and boil it down to one sentence, here's how I would define a killer blog post. If you want to write a killer blog post, just write stuff that people want to read and share.
That was a pretty simple, profound sentence right there.
If people don't want to read it.
Exactly. A killer blog post is something people want to read and share. There you go, everyone. There we go. That's what we're aiming for. I just felt like it was so important as we begin this how-to podcast that we really know what we're aiming for. Yep. So those were maybe some words you didn't understand or you hadn't heard before with regards to traffic, engagement, and sharing. But basically, we want to create the kind of content that people are interested in and want to share with their friends. So it's that simple. So for those of us who invest the time to write a blog post, we certainly don't want to spend all of those hours agonizing over every word just to have it basically go out there and die. And so now no crickets. So Michael, you're going to help us walk through seven steps to get the very most traction that we possibly can for our blog post, correct?
Yes.
Let's dive into step number one.
Okay, step number one, and this was huge for me in about 2008, was focus on your readers. So this is really when I hit the inflection point in 2008, when I went from about an average of 700 readers a month, 700 unique visitors, to put it back in the language we began with, to about 20,000 readers a month. And it was because I started focusing on my readers instead of focusing on me, because as it turns out, most people are tuned in to the most popular radio station out there, WIIFM, which is what's in it for me.
Okay, that was just spectacular. Thank you for that. WIIFM. There we go, everyone.
So people, I mean, that's what people want to know about.
But it's true. You know? It's true. And their attention span is pretty short. So that what's in it for me has to be answered within the first few seconds, really, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when people started blogging, and a lot of people have figured this out now, but when people started blogging, they were writing about them. Uh-huh. And writing about you might be important if you're a celebrity. They care what you're eating for lunch or who you're hanging out with. And I think as you build a personal brand, that can also be somewhat important. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's really about, are you helping other people solve their problems, answer their questions, meet their needs in some way? Mm-hmm. And as I've taught for a long time, one of the best ways to do that is to do a reader survey. You've got to become a student of your readers. Mm-hmm. And so every year, with the exception of 1 year since about 2008, maybe even earlier than that, I've done a reader survey. And I ask them a bunch of what I would call demographic questions and psychographic questions, which are just two big words to explain two simple concepts, which are, you want to know the statistical information about your readers. You know, what's the age of your audience uh-huh. on average? What's the gender of your audience? Do they have a specific, you know, religious worldview? What's their education level? All that, because you want to talk in the language that communicates with that audience. Mm-hmm. Then you want to go into the psychographics. And this is really the basic motivations of why people do what they do. And there's two things I'm always looking for here. What do people want? In other words, what do they aspire to? Like, the big thing that people want in my audience, they want to succeed at work, but they want to win at life. Or to say it another way, they don't want to be successful at work at the expense mm-hmm. of their most important relationships and their other priorities. So I know that. So then the second question, that's like the first psychographic piece of information I want. What is their aspiration? What do they want? And it's amazing if you ask people what they'll tell you. They'll tell you what they want. And then secondly, what's getting in the way? What are the obstacles? What are the challenges? What is keeping them from getting what they want? So with my audience, one of the biggest ones is people feel overwhelmed. They feel like they've got too much to do. There's not enough time on their calendar to mm-hmm. get it done. Mm-hmm. And so I spend a lot of my time helping people deal with that.
Absolutely. So focusing on the readers would be, I mean, I love that this is the first step, because that really is the key to
yeah.
honing in on the purpose of your blog and what you're going to be writing about.
Yeah. And so just like, this is why comments are also so valuable, because if you'll just pay attention to what people ask mm-hmm. in the comments, or particularly if you have a little bit of visibility and people are starting to write to you and asking questions, you could create a very effective, powerful blog if all you did was, instead of replying to those email messages, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but instead of just answering that one person, you can bet that that person is a proxy for a big percentage of your audience that has a similar question. So go ahead and turn that into a blog post. And here's the cool thing. If you got that question once and you got it twice and you get it three times, Dan Miller says, that's a good indication to you that you need to write a blog post or maybe even create a product.
I was just going to say, if you hear it that many times, I think you need yeah. to create a product.
But the fun thing too is that once you've written that blog post, and I do this all the time because I've got, I don't know, 1,500 blog posts in my archive. When somebody asks that question, it's so easy for me to direct them back to a blog post mm-hmm. where I kind of offered up my best thinking on that topic.
Well, I think this is such great advice. I've actually done this a number of times lately where I get an email question. Mm. And so I end up answering that email pretty in depth. But as I answer them, I say, this is going to become a blog post. So and I just cut and paste and turn it into a blog post. It's great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's a great way to do it.
All right. So first step to creating a killer blog post here is to focus on your readers. What is step number two?
Step number two is write a powerful headline. You know, the reality is we live in an incredibly noisy world. And if you don't give some thought and care to writing a headline that makes you stand out in a sea of noise, it's going to get ignored. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the biggest problems I think people have in this area is they try to be too cute. They create one of those headlines that really is cute if you could just be there to explain it to them. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to be explaining it to them, because they're looking at, either they subscribe to your blog in their email, and so they're looking at subject lines, and based on that subject line or the headline, they decide to read it or not. Mm-hmm. Or they're looking at your blog post in a RSS feed, real simple syndication, using a blog reader like Feedly or mm-hmm. Reader or one of those, and they're just scanning down through the headlines. It's very, very similar, like books on a shelf that are spying out. Like if you go to any Absolutely. Bookstore in the world, mm-hmm. it's very few books that, you know, are what we call face out, where you can read the title, the subtitle, see the cute picture. 90% of them are spying out, where the only thing you can see is the headline. And if you don't grab in the headline, you lose. It's not going to get read. So I spend a ton of time on headlines, and I want to give you a couple of resources. Probably one of the best is one that you can find, and we'll have a link in the show notes to this, on how to write magnetic headlines. And it's it was created by Copyblogger, which is one of my go-to sources for better writing, particularly on the web. But how to write magnetic headlines, and it goes through all the different types of headlines and how to really write compelling headlines. Another book that I've mentioned on this show many times, which sounds a little cheesy, but has been enormously helpful to me, is a book by David Garfinkel called Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich. And what David did, this is like a desk reference. That's how I look at it. I use it as that. What he did was he looked at the top direct mail headlines of all times, the ones that sold the most product, that performed the best in the marketplace, and he uses those as kinds of templates, and then he shows you how you can adapt it for a particular use. And so he's got about 20 of those in the book that are the best performing headlines of all time, and I have created so many based on that. So anyway, those you got to get educated. I guess Absolutely. That's what I'm trying to
well,
say.
Well, and this is good news for people like me who really struggle to come up with the right kind of headline. So, because headlines on a blog post is different than the title of a book, as far as you don't have, I mean, we have the same kind of attention span as you mentioned, but those, gosh, people just fly through their potential list of reads so fast. I even think when I look at my news app on my phone, there's very few news articles that I click on for the same reason.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that was interesting is I pulled a list of my most shared posts of all time. Mm-hmm. This is based on Facebook shares, okay? And so just I want you to catch the headlines. My number one of all time is called Why Speaking Well of Your Spouse is So Important. 53,000 Facebook shares.
Really? Amazing.
Yeah. Now, see, I think the thing that works in that is that people probably haven't heard that before, but intuitively they know it's got to be true. Mm-hmm. And so they want to know why it's important. Mm-hmm. Or here's another one. This is my second one. This won't surprise you, but 5 reasons why you should take a nap every day.
Yes, I love. That's actually one of my favorites.
Over 50,000 Facebook shares.
I would say the same thing is true there. People want to believe it's true. And so
that's right.
And so hidden in there, they desperately want to believe it's true. And so they want to go read it to have confirmation of that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. This is another interesting one for me too. And I think I need to get a clue here because I don't write on marriage very often, but as you know, Gail and I have a great relationship. Uh-huh. And whenever I write on it, it's a big deal. But here's one. What are you doing to protect your marriage?
Ooh, I like that. But that headline hidden within it is kind of a risk of consequence. I mean, it has both of what to do in order to prevent, but even the word prevent or to protect, yes, has that hint of something consequential. So we want to figure out what it is to avoid it.
It's a bit of a threat. Okay, here's another one. Why you aren't dead yet.
Okay.
That's actually
I really like that. I'm trying to remember if I've read that one, but I love it. It's very catchy.
You know, honestly, it's one of my favorite posts that I've ever written, but it's a true story that I had with somebody who at the age of, in their 80s, thought their best years were behind them. And I was trying to convince this person that you're alive for a reason. Uh-huh. You know, God's not done with you yet. And this ended up being picked up by a church in North Carolina. They preached an entire sermon series based on this one post. Here's another one too. I love this one. I won't give you but a couple more, but here's one. How a small shift in your vocabulary can instantly change your attitude.
Oh, see, and that's full of a promise. I mean, that's just filled with a promise.
It is, and it also piques your curiosity.
Uh-huh.
Or 12 surprising ways to use Evernote you might not have considered.
Well, that, so anyway, yeah, see, that just makes me want to go click on it right now because I want to know what I haven't considered.
Good. All mission right. accomplished.
All right. So far we've talked about the first two of seven steps. The first, to focus on your readers. Second, write a powerful headline. And Michael did a great job of teasing us with some of his most popular headlines, which it basically did the job of convincing me that it's important. So well done. What is that third step of writing a killer blog post?
Yeah, you need to include a relevant photo or image. You know, we live in such a visual world. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can share with you beyond a shadow of a doubt that if you use images in social media posts, it will increase mm-hmm. how that's being read and shared. It just draws us to it. And again, it's because we live in a world where people are scanning, and an image is much more compelling than mere text. So first of all, you got to find a source for your photos. The one that I use, but it's not cheap, is istockphoto.com. And I like it. It's owned by Getty, which is the largest source of photos in the world. But you pay a licensing fee. What you can afford to do as a blogger is just do a Google search and grab some photo that you see on the web, because they will hunt you down mm-hmm. and charge you some outrageous fee, because images are copyrighted just like content is. Mm-hmm. And so you got to make sure you have the permission. So I'd rather pay a little bit and get an image from a reputable source so that I know that it's, you know, licensed and I'm protecting and respecting the rights of the photographer that took that picture. But I want to give you another source here. This is a blog post. We'll link to it in the show notes. It's called The Busy Blogger's Guide to Creative Compelling Images, My Top 5 Resources for Blog Posts, Social Media, and More. And some of these are free.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so one of my favorites is...
And that's going to be in the show notes too, right?
It is. Okay. And so one of my favorites here, and I'll just share this, is one called Unsplash. And so it's an incredible resource. We use it a lot for quote cards, some of our ebook illustrations and other products. Great search, but the images are free.
Oh, nice. We like free. All right. So include a relevant photo. And I know from talking to you in the past, Michael, that you spend for the whole blog writing process, you spend more time finding that photo than most people want to imagine.
Yeah, because it's so important. And I mean, again, all I have to do is look at even newspapers today, USA Today. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were the ones that first started doing these in color. And yeah, it's important.
Great. All right. So include a relevant photo. What is step number four?
Step number four is tell a relevant story. So I've talked about this on the podcast before, and also in my blog about the anatomy of an effective blog post, where I talk about sort of a template that I mm-hmm. use. But I typically... open a blog post with a story, because there's nothing, I mean, you know this from being a public speaker and a writer yourself, nothing arrests people's attention. And there are specific psychological and neurological reasons for this, mm-hmm. but nothing is more engaging than a story. So I always start with a relevant story. Then I do a pivot to the principle that I want to teach. And then I do, you know, you and I would call from SCORE, the rationale. Uh-huh. But in this case, there's a couple ways to get great stories. You know, sometimes when you hear a great speaker, you think, wow, how could I be a storyteller like that? Or you read a blog post and you're phenomenal at this. You know, where do I get great stories? Well, one of the best things you can do, literally, is to mine your experience. Go on an excavation mm-hmm. of your own life. Mm-hmm. And so I do this in Evernote, but sometimes I'll think of a story. Like I was talking to my sister last night, and she reminded me that when she was 3 years old and I was 5 years old, that I broke her arm.
And how I could totally, you, Michael? How could you do that?
I know. I totally forgot the story.
Brother.
And so I made a sort of a do-it-yourself seesaw, and I had a sawhorse, and I put like a, you know, a 1x6 on it, and I put her on one end, and when I hit the bottom... She went flying. Up in the air and fell down and broke her wrist.
You launched your sister?
I launched my sister. Well, then, so I wrote that down. I said, I don't know how I'm going to use that later, but I haven't had that memory in decades. And then I thought of quite possibly the first memory I ever had, which was when my parents brought her home. I was just two, and they brought her home from the hospital. And I remember with my mom sitting in the passenger seat of the car with my new baby sister, and I crawled up to take a look at her. So again, you know, I don't know how that would be used. You know, maybe that's an example of wonder, or maybe it's an example of your first earliest memory. I don't know, but—
But there's so many. I mean, you're so right. Every day, every day there's little things that happen that can become a source of content, like some kind of life lesson or some kind of insight or perspective. And we kind of have to do what our friend Andy Andrews talks about and be a noticer, be someone who pays attention.
Yes. Yeah, we do. And we have to be willing to be vulnerable, because oftentimes the best stories, the ones that really connect and move the needle in terms of a killer blog post and more traffic and more shares and more engagement, are the ones where we reveal something that we're scared to reveal because we think maybe people will think less of us. So, for example, when I've written on my business failure that I went through in 1991, or I talk about, I mean, remember one time I talked about, I think it was like seven lessons I learned from a fight with my wife.
See, I remember that and I liked it. I wanted to know that as adorable as you and Gail are, that it's not always perfect.
It's not always perfect. And when I can reveal that and really be vulnerable, something that's difficult to share, that can be powerful. And then I try to distill a principle from that story. Because I don't think, this is my own worldview and I know it's yours too, but I don't think things just randomly happen to us. I think they happen for a reason. They happen to us for the benefit that we can derive out of it and from the growth we can experience. But I also believe that the things that happen to us, both good and bad, are given to us as a stewardship for the sake of others. So I know with you going through all your cancer experience, that's something that has absolutely become the leverage point for your ministry and for your influence and for your impact on other people. So John Acuff, and I'll stop and let you comment on that, but John Acuff says oftentimes when something bad happens, he says, "This too shall post."
It's so true. It's one of my favorite quotes ever.
So whenever I go through something really bad or something embarrassing or others, that I get a little bit of satisfaction, a little bit of redemption from saying, well, this sucked, but I've got a great blog post already in my mind that I'm going to use this in.
Totally, totally. And the more embarrassing it is, the more powerful it is at times. So, well, and just as a side note, I mean, a lot of what I write about has to do with kind of extreme stories, you know, extreme circumstances. But just as a caution to everybody, it doesn't have to be a tragedy or a massive drama to create a relevant story. A lot of the stories that I use seem to be small, random, maybe 60-second interactions that become a source of a relevant story and a powerful concept that I'm communicating on the blog.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be some big drama in order to be a relevant story. You just have to pay attention to your own life.
Absolutely. It's all there. There is so much material in your own life. But like if you listen to great comedians like Jerry Seinfeld or Brian Regan, people that I love to listen to, they are just telling stories one after another on themselves or just the stupid things that they observe.
Oh, absolutely. Jim Gaffigan does it just about normal life with wife and kids. And he has stories coming out of his ears just about normal everyday life. It's so much fun. So it's just more about learning to pay attention and then cataloging them, which you and I both use Evernote to do that. Well, so far we've talked about the first four of seven steps to creating a killer blog post. Focus on your readers. Number two, write a powerful headline. Number three, include a relevant photo. Number four, tell a relevant story. But before we continue our discussion on this, Michael, there is a special event happening soon that you'd like to talk about, and it features another one of your favorite subjects, productivity. Tell us about it.
Yes, I'm so excited about this because I've been doing the interviews, but we are hosting something we're calling the Free to Focus Productivity Summit. And what I did was I went to the people that I've learned from and that I want to learn from at even a greater depth and interviewed them about what their best strategies, hacks, tips, and just view of productivity. And my own feeling is that there is a new kind of productivity that is blossoming in the world. And it's not just about doing more or doing it faster. It's about creating a life you'll love, creating the life you were meant to live. And so that you're productive for the sake of creating the space for that life, not just so you can become more of a robot and more of a workaholic. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
So in the Productivity Summit, I interview a panel of thought leaders like Cal Newport, who's the author of Deep Work, a profound book that's really had a big influence on me. Greg McEwen, whom you and I have interviewed, author of Essentialism, Gretchen Rubin, The Art of Happiness, Sean Covey, and a bunch of others. And it's, again, just reshaping the way that we think about intentional living and working.
These are all people, by the way, side note, it's almost like you handpicked them for me. I would love to sit down and learn from them. So tell me how to sign up. Tell me how to go about attending it. And then give me the bad news. How expensive is it?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll save the expensive part for last, but you can find out more at freetofocus.com/summit. Sign up is free. So it doesn't cost you anything to watch them. We're using it as a way of creating exposure for a course that I'm going to be introducing later called the Free to Focus course, but there's no obligation. You're not going to get pitched at the summit. We're simply going to be raising the awareness, hopefully encouraging you on the topic of productivity, and it's completely free. Again, at freetofocus.com/summit, it's going to be September 1 through 9. This does go away at the end of that period, and you do have to register, but that's it.
All right. So I can register online at freetofocus.com/summit. It's September 1st through the 9th. It's absolutely free, zero cost involved. And all I have to do is just go online, sign up from home. I can sit in my pajamas on my couch and watch this, right?
That's right. No travel expense, no hassling through airports. By the way, have you been traveling the last couple of weeks?
No, I haven't. I was traveling right when Southwest had their big huge meltdowns, yeah. But I'm really glad I've been home for the last couple of weeks. So the good news for those who want to learn from all of these experts, including you as well, this is something you can do from home for absolutely free. And all you have to do is sign up. So once again, make sure you head to freetofocus.com/summit. Now let's dive back into our content for today, which is all about how to write a killer blog post. This is Michael's 7-step system to quickly create the kind of blog post that will gain you traffic, engagement, and shares. And we've talked about the first 4 steps, but without delay, let's dive right into step number 5.
Okay. Step number 5 is make your post scannable. So people are very busy. Mm-hmm. And if your content looks so dense that it's just a huge block of text, people are probably not going to take time to read it because it looks like too much work. Mm-hmm. So this is where you can use some things like subheads to break up the text, hugely important, or bullets, or enumerated items, or even images throughout the text. That's not something I do, but a lot of writers do that very successfully. But break up the text and make it seemed consumable, so people have a sense of progress as they move from one subhead to the next subhead or read through a list of items or a list of bullets.
Absolutely. It's amazing how simply keeping your paragraphs very, very short, or I sometimes recreate dialogue if I'm telling a story, and simply that breaks it up. It makes it easier for people to read.
You know, I want to pick up on something you just said there, Michelle, because keeping your paragraphs short is really important. This is like the easiest fix you can make to your blog. People, I see this all the time. People write these really long paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not as bad as the German philosophers when I was a philosophy major and would read some of these guys that would have paragraphs that would go on for pages. Uh-huh. But it still is discouraging. So I believe in this. Use short paragraphs, short sentences, avoid complex sentences when you can, and use simple words.
I love that. Short paragraphs, short sentences, and simple words. Love it. Easy to remember. All right. What is step number 6 then?
Keep your posts brief.
Which is a really good follow-up to what we just talked about, making them scannable. Same idea.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, same idea. I would suggest about 500 words per post. Now, I want to caution people that your posts can be too short. If they're shorter than about 300 words, then Google won't assign something they call authority to it, because it doesn't look substantial enough to be authoritative. And authoritative is important for your ranking in Google.
Okay.
So I would say 500 or so. A lot of people, yours seem to be Much longer than that.
Mine are about 750, but I do lots of narratives. So I can get away with a little bit longer because of that, but I'm working to cut that back.
Well, okay, so get this. So Social Media Examiner or Tim Ferriss, they typically write blog posts that are 1,000 to 2,000 words long.
Hmm.
But those are authoritative. You know, those tend to be, you know, things like, you know, the complete guide to blog images. You know, for example, I'm making that up. But something that really purports to be authoritative and comprehensive, and those can really work. And if you're going to only write one blog post a week, that would be a legitimate content strategy. But for most of the rest of us, I think keeping it brief is important because we don't want to create a rock that's so big we can't push it.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like we say, oh my gosh, this is turning into a master's dissertation just to get this blog post out. Well, I can bang out 500 words pretty much in an hour, maybe 70 minutes. But if it gets much longer than that, it's going to take a lot more research and a lot more time. So, and you will get better the more you write. So I want to encourage people, you will get better. I don't think about my writing so much anymore. I just write. But you know how self-conscious or self-aware you are at the
beginning?
Oh,
absolutely.
And it slows you down like crazy. But that you'll get over that if you just practice.
So you're telling me that over time, if I keep up this blogging thing, I'll get less self-conscious? That's what you mean?
Yeah.
So I'm 8 years and counting. Good. Good to know. All right. What is the I'm halfway there. What's the final step to quickly creating a killer blog post?
Okay. This one's an easy one. And I'm not sure it works quite as well as it used to, but I like to end every blog post with a question. And here's why. Because I want to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have the privilege as the blogger of my blog of going first. So I get to kind of frame up the conversation, introduce the topic, but I don't expect that I'm the last word on that topic. And I believe that my readers are going to have a ton of stuff to contribute. Like I was talking earlier about that one on the, you know, the 10 apps that I install first on any device. Well, what's cool about a post like that is all my readers start throwing in all the apps that they like. And I'm going, whoa, that's a great discovery. Hadn't heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does become a dialogue and a conversation. So if you're not getting comments, one of the reasons maybe is because you're not inviting them.
So true. You know, and it's interesting. I always ask a question and I have found like, you know, that it's not quite as effective as it used to be. But what I have found that asking a question at the end of the blog post, some people will leave comments and I have pretty good engagement on my site as far as the comments. But some people, even if they don't feel comfortable posting a public comment, will reply or send me an email with insights that maybe are more personal. And I learn as much from that as I do with the public comments as well.
That's good.
Just having that open door, letting people know that you're trying to be somewhat accessible as much as you're able to.
Yeah, I think it's also just respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's got to be, though, is it's got to be an open-ended question. You know, it can't be just a yes or no question.
Agreed.
You know, have you ever felt like this? Yes or no? Well, I mean, that's not a conversation.
No, it's not. Not
that's rhetorical, but that's not a conversation.
Absolutely. And I even like asking a question that might encourage disagreement, or have you had a different experience just for the sake of learning and growth? I think it's great.
I agree.
All right. So today, Michael has given us his 7-step system to quickly create a killer blog post. First step, focus on your readers. Second step, write a powerful headline. Third step, include a relevant photo. Fourth, tell a relevant story. 5, make your post scannable. 6, keep your post brief. And 7, end with a question. Well, if you enjoyed today's episode, you can get the show notes and a full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. But do us a favor before you go. I promise it will only take a very short time, but please head to iTunes and rate this podcast. This is huge for us in terms of improving our ranking and keeping the show visible so other people can discover it. So thank you ahead of time for helping us out. Do you have any final thoughts on this subject today, Michael?
Yeah, I think that anybody can get better at blogging if they'll just become a student of what works. So it kind of goes back to those first 3 metrics for a killer blog post. You know, we live in a world where we get near instant feedback on our writing. And I remember when I first started out in the book publishing world, oh my gosh, I mean, you'd spend years maybe writing a manuscript, you'd send it to a publisher, you wouldn't hear for months whether it was accepted. They would put it out in the marketplace. It'd be several other months before you had any sense of whether it had traction and what readers thought. Today, with blogging, You can put a blog post up this morning, mm-hmm. and by noon, you've got a pretty good sense of whether it's working. If you'll start noticing that, what works and what doesn't work, and start building a strategy based on that, you will get better and build an audience. It's that simple.
Absolutely. Just great advice. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. We always enjoy hanging out with you. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.